May it please the Court, my name is Kelly Reynolds and I represent the petitioner Cesar Amaya in this matter. I would like to try to reserve 1 minute for a rebuttal.
Sure.
In this case, we have a Board of Immigration Appeals bereft of any analysis, appeals decision bereft of any analysis, and an immigration judge decision that merely stated that none of the official reports supported Mr. Amaya's contention that he was more likely than not to be tortured. In fact, the immigration, as an initial matter, I believe that this Court is going to, would have to look to the immigration judge's decision because the Board of Immigration Appeals reaffirmed it or concurred with it in simply a one sentence, So if you look to the immigration judge's review or analysis with regard to the claim under the Convention Against Torture, he goes through two reports, the profile of asylum claims and the country conditions, the State Department country conditions reports, and says, well, neither of these say that it's more likely, he's more likely than not to be tortured. And then the immigration judge made the very strange finding that if 38,000 people were deported to El Salvador in 2005, that Mr. Amaya would have had to demonstrate that 19,001 people were tortured by the government.
And let's assume that statement is both strange and incorrect. My question, in a sort of a general way, is it just an errant bad statement in an otherwise analytical IJ report? It's on page 9, and the IJ does have an 11-page report. I understand that only a relatively smaller portion of it deals with the CAT claim. But the IJ spends a lot of time going through the country report and his analysis of the expert witness. And so do we throw out the baby with the bathwater?
Well, the issue is he actually didn't spend a lot of time discussing his analysis of the expert witness's testimony. He spent one paragraph, according to my recall of the immigration judge's decision. He said he finds him
has a ring of truth, but he doesn't find his opinion in regard to likelihood is true because he looks at the report and some people agree with him, but neither of them say it's more likely than not that a tattooed young member is likely to be tortured or killed. He analyzes the expert's testimony, finds him a credible person, but same expert as we have in all these cases, but doesn't find that he's very convincing. I guess let me ask the question differently. If that statement, let's call it the errant statement, incorrect statement, weren't in this IJ's findings, would there be substantial evidence to support?
No, Your Honor, because there's no real discussion with regard to the CAT claim of what actually already had happened to Mr. Amaya. We have a case here where Mr. Amaya was deported in August of 2004. He was taken off of a bus, pistol whipped, beaten, and taken to jail in November of 2004. He was released 1 week later, no charges, and was told that he got lucky because his arrest coincided with a riot where the human rights agencies became involved and they started releasing people who had not had charges.
But the IJ does discuss he doesn't quite say it in those terms, but in pages 8 and 9 does discuss this incident.
He discusses this incident and defines it as getting roughed up. So, and the question is, and I'm not asking this court to find that one specific incident does equal torture, but I am saying how many times does this have to happen to one person in order for it to equal torture? Because Dr. Gonzalez, and I know that he wasn't a doctor at the time, but he actually is now, so I'll refer to him as that. Dr. Gonzalez established that the moment that somebody gets arrested, they are much more likely to be rearrested. And given Mr. Amaya's experience when he was pistol whipped and beaten before being taken into jail with no medical attention and held for a week, how many times does that have to happen to Mr. Amaya in order for him, for that to constitute torture? And it's simply because it's very clear that what happened is that the police found, the police determined that he must be a gang member. They went through the bus and just singled him out. So what you're looking at is there was no discussion of Dr. Gonzalez's discussion of the increased risk factors as relates to Mr. Amaya. He's already been arrested. He's already been registered. Dr. Gonzalez believes that he survived in El Salvador, or he survived until he had this hearing, simply because he came back to the United States. And if he ends up back in El Salvador, he's going to be seen as more of a risk to the police, because he's going to be seen as a shot caller, which unfortunately didn't get defined too well in the expert testimony. But
what is it that you want us to do?
Well, in this case, actually, I'd like you to send it back to the immigration judge, because the board did no analysis and the immigration judge did a very, very little analysis. I mean, in this case, the board of the immigration
judge. What would you say is the error? I mean, we just can't send it back because we think there's a need for more evidence.
The heavy reliance on the Department of State country reports was the error. All the immigration judge did was quote the country reports and the profile of asylum claims in this case, and say that these two U.S. government issued documents, which we can look at sort of out of a political perspective, especially given the timing of this case. Dr. Gonzalez did address the political ties between El Salvador and the United States that were going on during this period of time. So that heavy reliance on these reports it's not reasonable. It ignores the rest of the evidence in the record, and there was substantial evidence in the record, aside from Dr. Gonzalez's testimony, that there are paramilitaries and death squads operating in El Salvador, that off-duty police officers, because they are, because El Salvador, the police department is ill-funded, that they are operating as vigilantes when they are off-duty, that many people, that numerous people have been killed in death squad style, and that was never even addressed by the immigration judge. And there's a ton of evidence that was never addressed.
There's one thing you said that, at least for me, caught my eye. The reference to the prior incident when he was, he had formerly been in El Salvador. The IJ characterized that. He says the respondent has testified himself to an incident where he was taken off a bus by the police or a combination of police and military and roughed up and jailed. And then the IJ goes on to say he did not testify to treatment arising to the level of torture as defined earlier above. What exactly did he testify to about that incident?
Mr. Amaya?
Yes.
Mr. Amaya testified that he was pistol whipped, thrown to the floor, beaten. I say pistol whipped because he was hit with the back end of a rifle, is what he stated. That he was thrown to the floor, beaten, and then taken to jail and held for a week without any charges. That was what Mr. Amaya testified
to. Does that arise to the level of torture as defined in the case law?
I don't think that it rises to the level of torture once, but I think if it's something that is likely, very likely.
No, I understand the future. I guess the question is, you're not contending that the IJ was made an incorrect factual finding that this incident did not arise to the level of torture.
No, I think that I think that the case law is pretty clear that this, I mean, it's borderline. I do think that it's borderline. I mean,
your point is, I guess, the IJ didn't give it enough consideration.
And the IJ also didn't give it enough consideration to how often is this going to happen in the future to Mr. Amaya. He's already been arrested and thrown in jail once. How many times, and Dr. Gonzalez testified to the fact that just because of that, it makes it more likely that he's going to be arrested and thrown in jail again. So how many times does somebody have to be beaten by the police for it to cross the line from police abuse to torture? And, of course, the IJ did nothing to consider the issue of death squads, paramilitaries, which the evidence in the record is very, very clear, are operating within El Salvador.
If you were to go back to the IJ, is there anything else you would add to the record?
Well, obviously, this hearing took place 7 years or 6 years ago, so that's difficult to address because, of course, 6 years is 6 years. If there's anything else that I would add to the record, it would be a number that I have since discovered was erroneous, the 38,000 number. The 38,000 number is actually the number of people who were deported to all of Central America. I looked it up. And actually in 2005, 1,900 gang members were, and I'm just answering the court's question. I'm not asking you to consider
this. Well, my question was what would happen if you got back down.
Right. 1,900 gang members were deported to El Salvador, according to migrationinformation.org, in April 2006. And in January and February, there's evidence in the record of this, of 2005, 522 people in El Salvador in only 2 months met with violent deaths. So actually, Judge White's determination of 38,000, 19,001, can you show that? We would be able to get closer to that if the actual accurate numbers were addressed.
I don't know. I guess this is all speculation.
Yes.
Is your 522 of gang members deported?
No.
Okay.
No, unfortunately.
because Dr. Gonzalez could do a good job in Los Angeles if you were using those numbers.
Dr. Gonzalez addresses that. Dr. Gonzalez addresses that. They don't account for who was who.
Okay.
Nobody makes those.
Thank you. We hear from the government again.
May it please the Court, Dara Smith for the Attorney General. Again, the only issue in this case is whether the record compels the conclusion that Mr. Amaya has shown that he's more likely than not to be tortured.
Well, that may not be the only question in this case. One question I have is, did the IJ use an incorrect legal standard for evaluating the evidence? That this statement on page 9 of the IJ report is problematic, isn't it?
It is not as well phrased as it might be, Your Honor. That's certainly true. The way that I read that is that the immigration judge was trying to show the scope of torture that would have to be shown, which is more than 50% of people who are similarly situated to Mr. Amaya. And effectively, certainly it would be, I think, impossible to show a literal exact number of people, he was trying to explain that based on the country reports and even the expert testimony, there's no indication that torture was on that level, was anywhere near that number.
But doesn't the case require a personalized evaluation of Mr. Amaya's situation, not a general notion of how many people who are deported get tortured?
Yes, Your Honor, it does have to be individualized. Of course, the immigration judge did address his specific circumstances in discussing the past events and effectively assumed that he might be subject to something similar in the future. And there is a lot of focus on country conditions simply because that's the most helpful non-anecdotal evidence of what's likely to happen in the country as a whole. But that doesn't mean there was a lack of individualized analysis. I mean, the individual evidence in this case, about Mr. Amaya was simply his past experiences, which is what the immigration judge did actually discuss on page 8 through 9, explaining that...
He said he was roughed up.
That is...
I mean, I don't know if getting whacked in the head is roughed up.
I understand, Your Honor, that is... also ill-chosen language, and it is an oral decision. And
I understand.
These things, unfortunately, are not always phrased as well as they might be, of course. And this is a serious situation, but under the court's case law, this type of thing is not torture. There's a case, Ahmed versus Keisler, in which a petitioner was taken into police custody and beaten 4 times, and the court found that although that might be persecution, it's not torture.
Let me see if I can review what I think the evidence was in this case. Mr. Amaya testified.
That's correct, Your Honor.
There was an expert.
Yes.
And there was a country report.
Yes, Your Honor.
Was there other evidence other than that?
There were other documents submitted. There was the issue paper on asylum claims and...
The profile of asylum claims.
Yes, that's right. That's right.
I'm sorry, I conflated the country report and the issue paper.
They're similar in a lot of ways, Your Honor. There's a letter from the Asylum Affairs Office, and there's some other letters and some other general sort of country.
Well, I'm trying to look at Mr. Amaya's side of the case. His evidence to support his CAT claim was largely his testimony and the expert.
Yes, Your Honor, and some general country conditions information. That's correct. And as in the previous case, the immigration judge didn't accept the expert's conclusion but did consider it. Effectively, I mean, the 19,001 number notwithstanding, the conclusion that this evidence was simply anecdotal was well supported. And the immigration judge did look at what Dr. Gonzalez did say, but just didn't find that that established that it was more likely than not that Mr. Amaya was going to be tortured in the future, based on the general country conditions.
Do you have any response to the claim that the country report is not reliable because of the political connections between the United States and El Salvador and the timing of those country reports?
Yes, Your Honor. Respectfully, that position doesn't hold up under this Court's case law. The Court has said numerous times that State Department country reports are entitled to great weight because they're the best evidence of country conditions. And although people can certainly speculate as to whether or not they're biased, the Court can't decide that it doesn't trust the State Department under its case law and then find that any decision relying on State Department reports is just unreliable.
Did Mr. Gonzalez point to any specific evidence as to why he believed those reports were unreliable?
Yes, he talked about the United States and the El Salvadorian government's involvement in the Iraq War together, specifically, and how they might be reluctant to say something bad about their allies in the military-industrial complex.
Did he point to any specific evidence? Because other than that, well, I just want to know, are you aware of any specific evidence that Mr. Gonzalez pointed to other than the relationship between the United States and the government of El Salvador?
Not that I recall, Your Honor. There was nothing specific to say that any particular piece of information was unreliable. He did talk about the fact that he believed that deaths went unreported, and so reports about the number of deaths might be understated. And the fact is that it's Mr. Amaya's burden to show that it's more likely than not that he'll be tortured. So saying that there's a dearth of evidence doesn't really help him very much because he's the one responsible for providing the evidence. So although he may believe that this is far more common than the State Department can show, he's unable to refer to any specific evidence about that. There's also the death squad issue, although he did mention death squads and the possibility that there's this vigilante action. On cross-examination, he admitted that no one knows who's behind the death squads. And so the question as to whether the Salvadoran government would acquiesce in what they do is there's effectively no evidence that they would at all because we don't even know who they are, and that's what Mr. Amaya's own expert said on that issue. If there are no further questions, thank you.
Okay, thank you. Let's see, this is... You may have gone over your time, but did you have anything... I'll give you a minute to just...
Briefly, I would state that on page 285 of the administrative record, there is a discussion with the, I believe it's the director of the Religious Task Force, who does discuss the operations of these death squads and says that what's going on is that the police are ill-equipped. And this was, I believe, a 2004-2005 report from, I'm citing page 285, where she states the police officers are ill-equipped to fight this gang war, and everybody agrees that this, I don't think anybody here agrees, thinks that this gang war is illegitimate. I think it's just illegitimately being executed. But she says that what's going on is off-duty police officers, or police officers are taking the law into their own hands because they are ill-equipped. So there is more than just Dr. Gonzalez's testimony to support his claim that death squads and paramilitaries are operating within El Salvador. That coupled with the fact, of course, that these deaths are simply not being investigated, it equals acquiescence, at least by the Salvadoran government.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, Counsel. We appreciate your arguments in this matter. We'll submit it at this time.